Musical differences. It's a phrase which so often appears in press releases when a band loses their guitarist or their singer decides to quit to write that woeful solo album. But musical differences are also what makes our love of rock and pop so exciting. So if you like the Bay City Rollers, I like Slade. If you like the Beatles, well, I like the Rolling Stones. And from the mid-90s, if you liked Oasis, then I liked Blur. Or should that be the other way round?
Oasis had Blur, made music for Chimney Sweeps, and then Albarn started singing Rockin' All Over the World, Over the Top of Roll With It, and he's got a point. It does sound like a status quo.
Oasis is the Britpop of Paul Weller's resurrected career, and the Spice Girls, and all that kind of stuff.
I think Blur are the British band of the 90s. I think Damon is one of the great talents of that era, and what they did was uniquely British, in a way that the music of Oasis never quite was.
It turned Blur from, you know, what they had been, which was a fairly expansive act that could do lots of different things, and sort of froze them for 2 or 3 years as a bunch of Cockney Barrow boys.
I can't be biased because they're from London, but I think they were a little more intellectual than Oasis in a musical way. But idiots love idiot rock and roll. Three chords. Middle eight, bridge, out. It's immediate, it's banging your face, and it's totally what people want. It's no surprise that Oasis became massive, you know.
Pop music, that's all it was, and some of it was glorious and wonderful, but it just so went up its own arse at the end of it.
I can remember going out and buying a Roll With It, and I thought I'd registered my vote. But at that point, it got silly. When there's that story in The Sun about this married couple, and he was a Blur fan and she was an Oasis fan, the other way around, they were going to get divorced. I mean, really.
I'm Steve Lamack, and in part three of Don't Look Back in Anger, our four-part reappraisal of the Britpop movement, we'll be examining the two bands who were central to the scene. One from the north, one from the south. One essentially middle class, the other fiercely working class. But both destined to scoop Brit Awards and slug it out for the top of the charts. There's an entry in one of my old diaries, December 12th, 1989 to be precise, that simply says, Seymour, Oval Cricketers, on stage, 8:45. From what I can remember, the pub was a standard oblong with a bar down one side, and the stage was about 6 inches off the ground. While a handful of people milled around or propped up said bar, a group came on and clattered about the stage, making a tuneful, slightly art-punk racket, with occasional trippy melodies. By the time I saw them again, their new label Food Records had changed their name to Blur, and had begun grooming them as Smash Hits pin-ups. Sure enough, their second single, There's No Other Way, strode into the top 10 in 1991. And they followed it with their debut album Leisure, an okay alternative pop record which occasionally borrowed from the baggy sound of Manchester.
When Food Records signed them, they had something. They were cool, they were cute, and they had great songs.
Writer and broadcaster Stuart McConey.
But they were very much in that art school tradition. They were like a sort of cross between Wire and Sid Barrett's Pink Floyd, you know, and the Buzzcocks or something like that. And what Dave Ball from Food Records said to them is, look, we kind of like this, but you're going nowhere with this name Seymour, and the kids are never going to buy this. You want to sound a bit more like Jesus Jones.
Taking the fun out of everything, making me wrong when I don't want to think. Taking the fun out of everything, I don't want to think at all.
Despite being fuelled by their early success, Blur's attempts to consolidate their position as the next big thing began to falter. There were a couple of ill-fated American tours, one particularly dreadful London gig where the band were almost too drunk to stand, and also a handful of poor reviews, all of which led to the group withdrawing to consider their next move.
I don't want to be U2, but I think that's sort of what's expected of us. But the whole reason I ever wanted to be in a mainstream band was because I wanted to do something that was just going to be odd and sort of jarred slightly.
It wasn't going to be an easy thing to achieve, to be popular and still edgy, or indeed, odd. While Blur's trajectory was heading downwards, the grunge scene, spearheaded by Nirvana, had taken up residence in the music press, bringing a whole wave of new American rock bands to these shores. Having been hurt by their apparent fall from grace, Blur singer Damon Albarn took the only obtuse route open to him. Instead of trying to play the Americans at their own game, he determinedly made Blur sound more British than ever, even to the point of using that most idiosyncratic and archaic British art, music hall, as an influence.
I was born in the East End, though I wouldn't call myself, you know, a true Cockney, and I lived there for 10 years, and that was the music I really loved, you know. And it's a sort of sinister, kind of funny thing about music hall, which I love. And if you play the piano, it's either Chopin or music hall, and I can't play Chopin.
By the time the band re-emerged with their second album, Modern Life is Rubbish, they were pictured in mod-style suits in front of graffitied walls, crying out with slogans like British Image Number One. After an initial lukewarm reception, Blur began to rebuild their reputation. One, they were a great live band. Two, Albarn's lyrics had become more and more intriguing. Each one a postcard from someone else's life.
Blur's angle was much more in the tradition of Madness or the Kinks, in that it was songwriting based on little vignettes of life.
Andrew Harrison of Word magazine.
Little observed slices of what it means to live in Britain, or mostly London.
When grunge has got this foul dominion over the land, this is exactly what I want to hear.
Stuart McConey.
It was funny and bright, it was a little bit arty, a little bit intellectual, but it also, it seemed to have noticed everything good in British pop, from David Bowie to the Teardrop Explodes to, you know, the Beatles and the Small Faces. It was knowing, but in a good way.
He's a 20th century boy, with his hands on the rails, trying not to be sick again, and holding on for tomorrow.
As Blur were preparing to release their third album, however, another band arrived on the scene at the start of 94, hell-bent on kicking the Americans into touch and overthrowing the top 10.
We were sat on the tour bus in America, right, in 1984, and he actually said to me, "Remember, do you think we're ever going to play to 30,000 people? Here's Mr. Big in here, giving it the big in here, right?" He didn't even think we were going to play to 30,000 people. And then, like, the first time we played Hill Squat, and then, like, Nebworth, blah, 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 and the rest of it, there was, like, kids were coming with the mums and dads, and we never set out to play to mums and dads. But that is what success entails.
Famously, Noel Gallagher had wrested control of his siblings' band away from brother Liam and his mate Bonehead. Following months of rehearsal with Noel's new songs, they signed to top independent label Creation, after his boss, Alan McGee, spotted them supporting 18 Wheeler in Glasgow. And after two false starts, they finally finished making their debut album, Definitely Maybe.
Can I ride you?
The two albums, Definitely Maybe and Blur's Park Life, were to set a new benchmark for 90s British pop. But they also showed the extraordinary differences between the two groups. Blur were redolent of the Kinks, Oasis inspired by the Beatles. Blur were middle-class southerners, Oasis working-class northerners.
And it was really exciting at the time because the way it was cartoonified was, do you want to back the middle-class art school boys or do you want to back the rough-tough working-class lads from the estate? There was a north-south thing there. Do you want to back the gruff-tough northerners or do you want to back the southern Jessies? It was very exciting.
I have to say that Oasis certainly had, and it still has, music that owes a lot to the Beatles.
Chris Smith, then the Culture Secretary for New Labour.
I like Oasis, I like their music, I think they've done good stuff. I'm not sure I'd put them in precisely the same league as the Beatles.
It wasn't just their music which revealed different influences. Lyrically, Albarn and Noel Gallagher, the chief songwriters, used markedly different language and ideas. Noel's anthemic songs featured I, you, me.
The lyrics, Noel Gallagher's been perfectly open about it. A lot of them don't make an awful lot of sense. They're not supposed to. They're supposed to just carry a tune and give you the general good feeling of listening to a good old rock and roll song that says anybody can do it. If you want to do it, do it. Which is a very punk rock ideal. Your confidence and your desire to do things will carry you forward.
Albarn, on the other hand, conjured up his mini soap operas using words like them, him, her.
The Kinks and Madness, for me, always wrote about characters who are slightly loony, and I sort of like doing the same. What I like is to come out of a sort of character and then wind them up, and then they go from A to B within 3 minutes.
Oasis had gigged consistently around the club circuit during the first part of 94. Having dreamt of a record deal and a way out of their damp Manchester rehearsal room, they really were up for anything.
On stage, I just want him. And there's only me and him, right, that we'll ever get this. It's like when he turns to me and just goes, are you mad for it? And I go, aye, cocker. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Blur had already risen to the dizzy heights of larger venues like the Nottingham Rock City, where they began their Park Life tour, a jaunt which became increasingly reminiscent of Beatlemania.
Blur as a whole really were like the Beatles. I always thought knocking around with them at that time, it was like being in A Hard Day's Night. Even Dave, the drummer, had this endearingly drummerish charm about him.
Support on that tour came from new arrivals, Sleeper. Here's their singer, Louise Wenner.
The reaction to Blur on that tour was almost sort of devotional. And so you got a sense that something really was happening. But apart from that, I mean, you know, they were kind of incredibly sort of cliquey buggers. You know, they were alcoholic, they were rude, they were just, you know, I think they were quite ignorant, really.
With both the Blur and Oasis albums leading the Britpop charge, the rivalry between the two bands began in earnest.
The show always needed to kind of create talking points to still be relevant.
Top of the Pops producer, Rick Blacksill.
And I'd invited Damon to present the show. And at the time that he accepted the invitation, he had no idea, of course, of what the running order for the show would be. Because the day he was presenting the show was the week that a new Oasis single was coming out. So I thought I could get a good bit of TV out of here and I could get a talking point out of this. So I booked Oasis on as an exclusive. And Damon, as part of his duties as a presenter, obviously had to introduce them. We had some discussion up in my office about exactly how he was going to do that. And he had a few ideas, but obviously in a mainstream TV show, none of those were acceptable. And in the end, Damon's standing there with the gold mic in front of the stage and Oasis are standing there behind him. But the whole thing took forever to do because Liam and Noel and the whole band were just standing behind Damon, of course he couldn't see them, doing some very kind of famous and traditional hand gestures. And we must have done about 8 takes, and in the end I just had to go down on the floor and say, listen, we're running out of studio time, it's all very funny, but just let him do his link and let's get on with the show.
The competition between them came to a head in August 95. Amid claims and counterclaims about record companies tactically moving release dates, Roll With It by Oasis and Country House by Blur were released on the same day. The media rubbed its hands with glee. Even the usually staid BBC News covered the story with breathless excitement.
By characterising them as the Beatles versus the Stones, as white collar against blue, north versus south, good-looking Damon from Blur opposed to moody Liam from Oasis, the record companies are using rivalry to push up sales.
And everybody fell for it. It was the class war made flesh.
there'd been this kind of ding-dong. There'd been a few unpleasant things said in the press. And I think what had happened was there'd been this Who's Putting Out Their Single When, these two kind of biggish singles. And Damon, I think, said to Andy Ross of Food, well, come on, if they want a fight, let's have a proper fight, because it'll do both of us no harm, you know. We'll both get column inches out of it. Why don't we just release them on the same day?
It was the silly season. It was August, you know. So it was perfectly timed. Blur did it, no question of that whatsoever. Blur brought it on. Now it seems absurd, but at the time there was this totemic importance attached to who'd be number one, so off we went. You gotta roll with it, you gotta take it down, you gotta say what you say, don't let anybody get in your way. There's a song too much for me to take. Don't ever stand aside, don't ever be denied. You wanna be here, you be if you're coming with me. I think I've got a feeling I've lost inside. I think I'm gonna take me away and hide. I'm thinking of things that I just can't abide.
Well, it was funny because I did Top of the Pops, you know, I introduced it the week when it had happened.
Jarvis Cocker.
I just think it just makes music into something like a sports day or something, you know. Who's won? I mean, it's not really... Music shouldn't be about that. It should be about who's done the best song. But in the end, it was whose record company could flog it to the shops cheaper.
And now it seems like complete madness when you think back. It does seem like absolute madness that, you know, people on the news are saying, tomorrow, pop groups Blur and Oasis will be releasing their new 45s in the same day. Excitement not seen since the days of Jerry and the Pacemakers and all that kind of stuff.
If you can tell an Oasis from a Blur, you should be on tenterhooks this evening. The battle of the bands is reaching its climax. They both have new records out, and on Sunday afternoon, one will go to the top of the charts. City dweller, successful fella, thought to himself, oops, I've got a lot of money. Caught in a rat race, terminally. I'm a professional cynic, but my heart's not in it. I'm paying the price of living life at the limit. Anxiety. Yes, it plays on him. Bedtime syndrome. Lives in a house, very big house in the country. Watching afternoon repeats and the food he eats in the country. He takes all manner of pills and piles up analyst spells in the country. Oh, it's like an animal farm. That's a rural charm in the country.
That set up a kind of, you know, like a football team rivalry.
Writer and broadcaster Robert Sandall.
Which was seriously good news for the sort of tabloid reading mentality. It identified two simple camps, which one are you supporting? It also reflected, to some degree, the dumbing down implicit in the music which that represented. I mean, I think Britpop, in a sense, was an expression of impatience with rock music which had pretensions to being something other than a damn good tune.
And, of course, what's hugely ironic about it now is that in both bands' cases, the two singles, Roll With It and Country Heights, I would say, easily the worst singles either band ever made. I mean, Country Heights is just awful. I'm a big Blur fan, but when the Oasis camp used to slag Blur off and say they're just making chimney sweep music, I mean, that's exactly right about that song. And it's got that awful video. Everything that was bad about Britpop is in that video. You know, the Page Three girls and Keith Allen mugging and Damien Hirst, and it's all so horribly made for FHM readers. And Roll With It is a terrible Oasis record. I mean, Roll With It, again, it's like the record that Oasis detractors imagine they make all the time. A terrible meat and potatoes rock song that, you know, isn't really good enough to be a status quo B-side.
But it was Blur who won the race to number one, though Oasis weren't finished. In fact, as the following months unfolded, Blur's Great Escape album began to fizzle out, while Oasis, with their second record, What's the Story, Morning Glory, went from strength to strength. For the next year, Oasis were on every jukebox and every TV show. They were even making some headway outside the UK, including that most lucrative of markets, the USA. Much to Damon's obvious chagrin.
It's one of those things that every time we go there, it's sort of always, oh, it's going to happen this time. I mean, they seem to be taking to Oasis at the moment, which, you know, I'm pleased that, you know, at last the British band is doing well over there, but it's still the sort of the blander side of what Britain's got to offer that does well over there. I mean, I haven't quite mastered that blandness yet.
Today is going to be the day that they're going to throw it back to you. By now you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it all before, but you never really had a doubt. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. And all the roads we have to walk are winding, and all the lights that lead us there.
The reason Oasis were the most successful of the Britpop generation to make it over there is because their music is, in some ways, the blankest. It's easiest to project onto. It is simple rock and roll.
Well, Oasis were a rock and roll band in the grand tradition, a big, old-fashioned, lumbering, American-style rock and roll band. Nothing wrong with that.
As their popularity continued to grow, Gallagher says now that it felt like the band were on a journey to something or somewhere big. Following the release of their next album, Be Here Now, that somewhere turned out to be Nebworth.
You know, they're not an art school band. They're a bunch of genuine, ordinary working-class lads. And what they wanted at the time was they wanted to go for the big prize. Their position was, why shouldn't it be something that you want to sing in the bath or in the company of 30,000 other people at a big concert? Why shouldn't it be a great, exciting, positive thing that we can all participate in?
Because that was, like, big time. That is like something that doesn't come to a bunch of lads from Manchester who just played, you know, like we wanted to play like 31,000 people off to Spike Island, you know what I mean? And like Nebworth was like a big bang, you know what I mean? It's not sunk in yet.
I stood at Nebworth with Alan McGee and watched Oasis.
James Brown, founder of Loaded magazine.
And I thought, this is amazing. This was what Alan and I and Jeff Barrett, who'd run a little record label, and all the other fanzine writers and club runners, this was the final victory. This was like a crusade that had been going on, and that Oasis gig was the pinnacle of it.
Again, I believed it all at the time. I so believed it all at that point. But I had to write about Nebworth for Q magazine. And I think the conclusion says something like, oh, truly we are living in a golden age. There you were among 125,000 people watching this group at this place that hitherto had been the preserve of your Queens and your Pink Floyds. So it was tremendously exciting.
You know, it's like, how far can you take from it? You know, I mean, you can only do the biggest gigs.
Yeah, you're right.
That's like, oh, of course I'm right.
You are right again.
My name is right, mate.
No, you're right.
But it's like, you can only do the biggest gigs that have ever been done. And then, like, where do you go from there?
The only place they could go now was down. And the press was already starting to turn on Oasis.
Nebworth was pretty horrible, really. It was far too big. And, you know, chicken McNuggets and chips were £5, and what a rip-off it was. But it was pretty thrilling as well.
What I found really horrible about it was that in a couple of years you'd seen Britpop turn from the excitement of achievement. What set in was this hideous triumphalism, and you get Oasis at Nebworth, this horrible bloated event with Oasis just essentially doing no different from running around and shouting loads of money. You know, it really was a loads of money event. It was, we've played the biggest show, look how great we are, look where we are, we're up here. And that was very, very different from the way it started out.
And the pressure was starting to tell on the Gallagher brothers, particularly during one infamous Radio 1 interview.
All these old farts, right, who, like, get out of the day centre, like, yeah.
Yeah, give me the money.
And, like, a microphone comes in, you know, you've got a problem with the kids, right, or Oasis, right, yeah. Obviously, like, yeah, and I ignored all that fats, right, yeah, because I dig all the music, I dig them as personal human beings, right, yeah. At the end of the day, right, obviously they almost want a scrap, right, and now I will offer them all right out here on radio, right, yeah, right, yeah. So they want a fight, right, Primrose Hill, Saturday morning, 12 o'clock, I will beat the living daylight out of them, right? I'll still give him a steak pie at the end of it, like. That goes for George, right? Jagger, Smitchards, right? Yeah, and the other whoever who gives me No, you calm down, you over there, right, because I've got Zimmer bit, right? Any of them old farts who've got a problem with me, right, leave the Zimmer frames at home, and I will hold them up with a good write-up, and that's the end of it.
Blur were also feeling the pressure, trying to top the defining Park Life.
It was the first one to sell a million, and it was dealing with quite odd subjects, however sort of quirky they were, and comedy. They weren't mainstream things. So everything that's come after it has not been a surprise for everyone. I feel as though I need to sort of start again with another idea.
They'd sort of deliberately tried to cast themselves out of the Britpop straitjacket, quite wisely as it happens, because they've continued to be able to make different music, expand in different directions.
I've got my head shaved by a jumbo jet. It wasn't easy, but nothing is. No.
Despite losing the commercial battle with Oasis, Blur, once again backed into a corner, returned with their eponymously titled fifth album, a harder and more credible collection featuring the huge hit Song 2. Oasis, meanwhile, had carried on as usual, with the bloated retread that was Be Here Now.
Blur, very sensibly, got out, and they said, we don't want to be part of this, and they've reinvented themselves as a kind of art pop group, and now I think are probably close to people like R.E.M. and U2. I think Oasis should have done the same, and I think the shame is that I don't think Oasis, for them, they're still making Britpop records with decreasing amounts of artistic or commercial success, really, and that is a bit of a shame.
Still, let's not put all our musical differences behind us.